So what I'm going to do in this talk, I'm going to give a brief overview of what we're trying to accomplish with this project, and then I'm going to talk about how we're doing our evaluation. And as I was sitting here this afternoon, I decided I didn't like my slides. But this structure is so, like, the slides are here. they are fixed in time and space, and they were submitted a week and a half ago, and we're just going to go with them. But I'll probably ad-lib, I'll probably, you know, just talk for a long time on some slides about something else. So the purpose of our project, this is I'll back up. U2U, Useful to Usable, is a five-year NIFA, USDA NIFA-funded project for $5 million. So this is a $5 million project, right? So hence we could actually, as we discussed last time, we could afford evaluation. We're in our fifth year, so I can talk about how we have done evaluation so far, how we've done what we call formative and process evaluation, and how we're planning to do our end-of-project summative evaluation. So what we tried to do with U2U, we recognize that successful crop production in our region, which is the north central region of the US, relies on favorable weather and climate patterns, that limited seasonal climate predictability can increase farm vulnerability, and that the current tools and models that existed before we started our work on U2U were not widely used and may not be meeting corn farmers' and corn advisors' needs. So our vision, here's our region. For those of you not familiar, you're in the region right now. 12-state region from the Dakotas over to Ohio. Our region, the project is only focused on corn. That's a NIFA funding thing. That's what they wanted, so that's what they got. Our vision is to transform existing climate information into usable knowledge for ag decision making, give farmers the resources and training to more effectively manage variable climate conditions, and increase extension's capacity to address agroclimate issues. With the long-term goal, there we go, of more resilient and profitable farms in a variable and changing climate. So our team, I am the project director of this team, which is why I'm talking. So Amy asked me to speak, although I'm actually talking about work that the Environmental Resources Center, Jenna Klink and Vikram, who you heard earlier, actually did. But I'm a social scientist by training, and I direct this team. So it has a very, very strong social science component in terms of trying to understand what farmers and farm advisors wanted. But it also has climatologists, crop modelers, agronomists, IT specialists, extension staff, etc., and evaluators, which are not on this little list. They're in the and more. And we represent all of these different institutions. So we have 9 universities in 8 states. Of our 12-state region, we actually started with the University of Minnesota. So when we wrote this proposal, it's a little interesting evaluation story. When we wrote this proposal, the University of Minnesota was our evaluation team. So I worked with an evaluator at the University of Minnesota, great guy. He helped me a lot with the logic model. And then he left a year into our project. He left the university and went to work for the state. And the University of Minnesota decided they didn't want to be part of our project anymore. So we were already working with the University of Wisconsin on our graphics and our communication, and I knew that they had a strong evaluation unit, and so since we already had a subcontract to them, it was pretty easy to just transfer that Minnesota money to Wisconsin. But still, there's always still that question in my head of why didn't Minnesota? They still had evaluators. I don't know why they didn't want us, but that's okay. We're very happy with where we are. So we just don't have anyone from Minnesota. So our project objectives, we started with 5 project objectives. The first 2 objectives, the idea was for them to be undertaken concurrently. So our whole premise of the project was that there was a lot of useful climate information out there. So we were never planning to collect new climate information. We were just planning to transform it into usable information, hence our name. So we were going to take this useful climate information, do a lot of crop modeling, climate modeling, different economic scenarios, and try to understand what would happen in the future so we could then understand what kinds of information we could deliver to farmers and to farm advisors. At the same time, we plan to go out and talk to our stakeholders, both farmers and farm advisors, about what they wanted. The goal being then taking what we confidently felt like we could produce with our models and our data, what we knew that people wanted, and actually develop decision support tools in that sweet spot in the middle, right? That we were going to develop these tools that actually stood a chance of being used, because people might want them. They weren't just these tools that might be these amazing tools based on some amazing climate and crop modeling that nobody out there in the real world thought were remotely interesting. We then plan to do pilot test our tools and methods and outreach across a four-state region, Iowa, Nebraska, Michigan, and Indiana, as four states that we decided were largely representative of our whole region in terms of the corn growing in our area. And we had a plan built in to actually evaluate that rollout in those four states. I think in our initial proposal, we actually talked about doing different things in those four states, and then we were going to evaluate how it worked across the four states. We didn't do that. That was far too complicated. And then disseminate across the 12-state region. So we're in year five now, and we are indeed disseminating our tools across the entire 12-state region. So just to summarize what we're all about, we strive to transform useful information into usable tools that actually get used. Stakeholder interaction has been essential for our project, not surprisingly, since it's driven and led by a social scientist, and I'm very passionate about engaging with stakeholders. So we've engaged with stakeholders from the very beginning of our project and all the way through our project. We've also been very, very committed to evaluation of our tools and of our team. So I'm going to talk about that at the end of this talk, that we've also evaluated our team and how well we have performed, which has been really helpful and insightful to make sure that we're meeting both the needs of our stakeholders but also our own needs. So that's evaluation. Okay. So why evaluate? We've used evaluation in a formative way. So we've used evaluation early on to figure out, again, what do people want? If we can actually then produce tools that meet with what people want, we will increase our impact because people will actually use them. We've developed our tools in collaborative ways with people. And then we're working on summative evaluation, so at the end of project, to really look at impact. We've also done a lot of process evaluation, which is mostly what I'm going to talk about today, to see how our tools are working as we're rolling them out. Okay, that's my next slide. Okay, so before I put up this condensed logic model, we talked about logic models before the break. And when we started this project, and this is where I wish if I could have messed with these slides, I would have. When we started this project, we had a day-long team meeting. So this goes to the importance of including your evaluators from the very beginning, which is a point that came up right before the break. We had a day-long meeting where we got together in Kansas City to work on this proposal. So it was over 5 years ago now. And this evaluator from University of Minnesota, he does have a name, Tom Bartholomew, great guy, just works for the state now, so he's not helpful to us. He's at the Department of Education or something. He guided us through this process. And I've done logic models before. I'm a social scientist. I always thought I did evaluation before. He guided us through this process using a program called CMAP. And every time one of us said something, he created this bubble on this CMAP that was projected in the room. And then he started drawing arrows from, like, this bubble of, you say you want to develop tools, that's going to go to ag advisors learn something, ag advisors use the tools, ag advisors learn something goes to farmers learn something. To develop the tools, you have to have this input from a survey of what people want. And so we ended up with this crazy diagram, which I really wish I could show you, but just picture in your head all of these bubbles that were color-coded based on whether they were inputs, outputs, outcomes, impacts. And when it printed out, it was on an 11 by 17 sheet, it was really dense still. It was a very, very, very detailed, true, I would say, logic model, right, where you could follow these arrows in a way that you can't follow. Once we go to that table format, you lose a lot of that flow and that logic. If any of you are interested, feel free to email me, and I will happily send you that CMAP. I have it in a PDF version, so you'll be able to look at it. When we were writing the proposal, I personally had a copy of that printed out on my desk. It took us 2 months to write this proposal. And I think a lot of other team members did as well. And based on how synergistic we were in our writing, so when everybody was writing their parts of the proposal, they could see how it tied into all the other parts, right? Because, you know, that's how things usually fall apart, is that everybody's doing their own little thing here and there and nothing ties in. So that was very helpful as we wrote the proposal, but also incredibly helpful when we started working on the project, right? Every time we started doing something, we'd say, well, where does this fit in this logic model? Did we plan to do this? Why are we doing this? So we were able to ask ourselves really critical and challenging questions because of that logic model. For our first two annual meetings, we actually put that same diagram up at the beginning of the meetings and said, okay, this is what we think we've done, this is where we're going, and really reminded ourselves and got ourselves all back on that same page, which really helped us plan our evaluation from the very, very beginning because we knew where we were going. So our logic model today doesn't look like that anymore. We simplified it. It looks like this now. So this is the right-hand side of that table logic model, where we have short-term, mid-term, and long-term outcomes. So our short-term outcomes are that we want people to be aware of our products. We want them to understand how our products fit into decisions they make. We want them to trust us, realize the agronomic and economic value of incorporating tools into their decision-making. Midterm, which we're hoping is in the lifetime of our project, so we're seeing midterm as within our 5 years. We want people to start using our products and start using those products in their decision-making. We want farmers to be doing that, but we also want advisors to be making more and better recommendations based on climate data in general, right? So we're hoping our tools actually lead to advisors recommending other things based on climate data. When the long-term outcomes, which are beyond the scope of our 5 years, would be that farmers are making more informed and better decisions, which will lead to all of these amazing, fantastic impacts. So, you know, just imagine that we're doing that and it's all good. So this logic model has been the version that we've been looking at our recent annual meetings once we got through some of the nitty-gritty of what we were going to do. And we pull it out every time we have a conversation about what we're doing. It's really, really helpful. I will say that our crazy CMAP figure that we worked on while we were doing the proposal, I actually came to Minneapolis. I was actually at a convention at this convention center for my personal life, like the week before the proposal was due, and I came to Minneapolis and I went to meet with Tom, and we sat in his office for a day and we made our amazingly great CMAP into a really, really boring table for the proposal because a 2-page logic model was required. And we were really nervous that if we turned in like this crazy CMAP, the reviewers wouldn't know what to do with it, right? So we spent a lot of time making this amazing, great linear thing that we never looked at again, right? But it was right here, so I remember that. Okay, so our tools, we've actually developed 5 tools. These are the 4 main tools that we've developed. I'm not going to talk about the tools. I'm just putting them up here just so you see what we've done. We have a 5th tool that we're currently developing that we'll roll out this winter, a little late in our 5 years, but we're getting there. So our goal is to develop, again, useful tools that actually get used. What we've done with these tools, we developed the tools, this is another bullet point I would have added if I could have edited my slide, but we did our surveys to find out what people wanted, and then as we were developing the tools, we went out to people, we went to focus groups with farmers and with farm advisors in Indiana and Nebraska as 2 states representative of the dry part of the Corn Belt, well, both dry, but one irrigated, one non-irrigated part of the Corn Belt. And we went out and we said, you know, we heard from you in surveys and other things that you were interested in nitrogen, or you were interested in growing degree days, you're interested in whatever. And we've mocked up a tool. Does this meet your needs? So before we went very far in the development of tools, we went out to people in focus groups. And I think by going out to people really early on with something that looked really messy, quite frankly, it's a lot easier for people to shoot that down and say, you know, no, that's not that interesting. How about something else instead? If we had gone to them with something we'd spent a year developing and it looked really pretty and had all the bells and whistles, I don't think anybody would have sat in a focus and said, yeah, no, that's not really what we need. We want something else, right? Because, yeah, I mean, maybe some farmers would, but most people are, I'm not so sure the advisors would have, I'm not sure. But people are by nature polite. If they know you put a lot of time into something, they're going to just nod and smile and say, that's nice. And then they're never going to use it, right? So we went out very, very early in these focus groups and did a lot of really what I call co-production, where we really produced with them what types of information, what types of tools they would like. Then, once we actually had our tools, so based on a lot of iteration through those focus groups with farmers and farm advisors in 2 different parts of the region, we then, you know, put a lot of investment into developing our tools, and we then did user testing. So we had expert volunteers, so people who volunteered at meetings such as this, where we talked about what we were going to do, did content checking for us, and we also used this company called usertesting.com for usability checking. And usertesting.com is really, really cool. They can help you. They have over 1 million users, but they can help you narrow your audience. And they actually have farmers on there, which was surprising to me when I was told we were doing this. I said, there won't be any farmers, and I don't care if, like, you know, whoever, you know, knows what's going on. So what you get from usertesting.com is they have people use your tool, and they videotape the people using the tool. And as the people are using the tool, they're talking about what they're doing. So they're given a task, right? Create a graph of your growing degree days and figure out when black layer is going to be or whatever. And so they go in there and they're talking through it, and you can see if people can't find a button, right? People don't know what's going on, or they're told to go and look in the help guide for something, and they're like keep going right past the question mark that needs help, and they're looking for something else. So really, really useful. You don't need to do very many of these to very quickly find out what the problems are. Right? So this isn't talking about structural changes to the tools. This isn't, is it the right tool, is it the wrong tool? This is, we've decided through our iterative focus groups that these are the right kinds of tools. Now we're trying to figure out if they're actually going to be usable, right? Like, we could put them out there, and if people go in there and they can't find the help button, nobody's ever going to come back. So before we put them out there, we did this kind of user testing. The types of changes that we made were really pretty straightforward changes, but they weren't things that we had seen, because you get so in the weeds on these things yourself, right? You stop seeing the problems, because of course it makes sense to us where the help button is, or how do we know how to zoom to get to things on our growing degree day tool, because we created it, so we know what it looks like. So really great resource. Did I go backwards? No, I didn't. So then afterwards, so after we launched our tools, we've done a lot of feedback. So we've done a lot of interactive outreach sessions, especially early on. We're not really asking for feedback now, right? Because we're done. We don't want feedback anymore. We're at full-on rollout. So if people don't like our tools, that's just tough. But early on, we asked for feedback in our interactive outreach sessions if people didn't like things, if they were confused by things, and then we fixed things. We put a survey link on all of our tools so people can tell us if something doesn't work, if they don't like it, what they would like to see improved, if they would like to see something else, an additional component. And we've spent a lot of time addressing that feedback and really carefully going through and continuously updating the tools. I want to just give a shout out to some of the people who've been involved in this. We have a team at Purdue in our the Rosen Center for Computing. Somebody else brought them into our project. I didn't know them. They have just been phenomenal. I mean, people who are just incredibly passionately committed to these tools and don't mind when we say, well, yeah, I know we told you we liked it that way, but then we took it out to the users and they didn't like that. So can you put it back the way it was before, or can you try it this other way? And you have to have people like that. If you're really going to do serious process evaluation where you're willing to change things midstream and keep changing things, you have to be working with people who are willing to do that, and you have to budget for that as well, right? You can't just budget for one-shot tool development. You've got to budget for a lot of back and forth, and that's what we did, and that's been really successful. The other group here, obviously, is the Environmental Resources Center at the University of Wisconsin, who are our current evaluators, so after the University of Minnesota abandoned us. Jenna took us on as her little, you know, pity case or something. Well, fine, I'll work with you. And it's an interesting, it's very interesting to me. So I, as a social scientist, I do some evaluation, which is why Amy invited me to talk, because she knows I do some evaluation, but I don't do this level of evaluation. I didn't, usertesting.com, never heard of it. So the University of Wisconsin was already part of our team. Tom Bartholomew at the University of Minnesota was already part of our team. So we chose not to hire an external evaluator, which I think is an important point when you're working on these larger projects, is NSF, for example, I think usually really promotes having external evaluators. These are people who are not, they're not coming to your annual meetings, right? They're sitting afar somewhere, and then they're evaluating what you're doing. But because they're afar, they don't really understand what you're trying to do, so it makes it very hard to evaluate. Jenna and Vikram and the other folks at the Environmental Resources Center come to our annual meetings. They're on our conference calls. They're very much a part of our team. So you could say that introduces bias into the evaluation, right? That's one way you could look at that. The other way you could look at that is that we are honestly trying to do a better job, so we're happy to get their feedback. And by them being a part of our team, they actually understand the nitty-gritty, so they can evaluate the nitty-gritty that I don't think if they were outside our team, they would be able to do. So that's just something, I'm just going to throw that out there for those of you working on large grants or thinking about large grants who might have a budget for evaluation, is to think about that internal versus external and how that would work. And I'm personally very happy with the choice to have done internal, and it also means that, you know, as a little fledgling evaluator myself, I can ask them questions and pretend that I'm one of their team. So and talk about it. So we wanted to broadly disseminate our tools and training materials to expand awareness and use of the products. What we have done there, we've done presentations at existing farmer and advisor meetings. We've done extended hands-on training sessions at selected events. There's one going on right now over in the Hilton that has CEU credits attached to it. We have an educational resources kit, so people, extension educators, other types of folks who work with farmers can sign up to get this, and they're mailed a packet of information so they can talk about our tools themselves, which we fully encourage. We're very happy to have other people do our dissemination for us. We do webinars. We have a checklist that you see here where when somebody's going out to an outreach event, even the people who aren't a part of our team, we ask them to fill this out. Jenna's team then puts together a little survey for each of those events. Based on that information, we can also track where the events are, which helps us evaluate both the sort of the reach of our tools, but also how we're doing with those surveys. So this is a chart that's current through February of 2015 that shows where we have done our delivery. And so you can see that across the 12-state region, there are some states we haven't done a very good job in. We haven't, for example, hit Kansas. We have no team members in Kansas, or Ohio, or North Dakota. We don't have team members in those places. We have hit Minnesota despite our lack of team member there. We have folks in Iowa and South Dakota who have very graciously gone to Minnesota. We're working very, very hard to get things done in Wisconsin. We do have team members in Wisconsin, but they're not the extension folks. We're working very hard to get things done in Wisconsin and Ohio and Kansas and North Dakota. This kind of a map, like doing this midstream, not at the very end, helps you evaluate and say, oh, we have a gap, right? Typically on projects, we're so busy, we're all so busy all the time, that we don't make a map like this until the end, right? And then we've got to write our report, and like, oh, where did we do our events? Having this, when you still have a year left to actually do your outreach, really helps you think, huh, where do we need to go and do our outreach? So that's really led us to focus on those states where we haven't done enough, and other states like Michigan where we haven't done very much to make sure that we're getting into those states. So we couldn't evaluate at all of those events, but at 64 of the events that were just through February of 2015, you can see that we already reached over 6,400 farmers and advisors about our tools. And we've done a lot more since February, and then our final big year five push is really starting now, running through the winter season of getting out to farmer and farm advisor events. Oh wait, update. Okay, there's an update. See, I should know my thing. 115 events. Okay. Outreach evaluation. So how are we actually evaluating all of this? We're doing post-event surveys. So when we go to things, we do this little half-page survey. We get people's contact information if they're willing to provide it, which we will use at the end of project. They don't know that. So don't tell the people over at the Hilton right now, because they're going to fill out that half-page survey, and then we're going to get their contact information so we can look at longer-term impact. So we're trying to understand what are the immediate intentions of the audiences, because as came up earlier, that's really all you can do at an event, right? You can just say, do you think you might use this? You don't know that they're going to use it, but if they at least think they might use it, that's an indication of something, right? If they say no, then it's a clear indication that you failed and that you have developed something completely not useful. How can we improve the way we do outreach in the future? So we've asked that early on, and if people want more information, we also try and find that out. And then the team at the Environmental Resources Center provides things like this to the rest of the team, telling us how well we're doing. So we find out, for example, that 84% of people at these events have said they'll spread the word about U2U decision support tools when we've asked that question. Note, it's not asked at all places. 211 people have asked for our sales kit. We've been to 112 events. We can look at where they are, and we can see how many of them we've done, where we've done our evaluation. We can also, over on the right here, see this is our very, very quick survey that we do at the time. 51% of people who've taken the survey have said they've used a decision support tool in the past. And then after our event, 93% of them say that they will use a decision support tool in the future, which is quite positive. So there's not this, you know, people aren't anti-technology and they remain anti-technology after our event. After our event, they're willing to consider using a decision support tool. And then we obviously have asked about the tools that we've used. We don't show all of our tools at all events. It depends on what the event is. Some of the tools are newer than others. Some of them we didn't show, like the probable field work days. I think we probably showed at one meeting or something. That's not a tool that we've spent a lot of time. We have not invested a lot in that tool. But what you see here are the percent of respondents who said that they're likely or very likely to use each of our tools. And so we see our Growing Degree Day tool, which is by far our most popular tool, but also the one that's not just popular with the people we've shared it with, but also the most popular amongst our outreach people, right? Because we see we've surveyed a lot more people about that tool because we've talked about that tool a lot more. So that's important to note. But we see, you know, a lot of people saying they're likely or very likely to use those tools, and combined 81% of people are likely or very likely to use at least one of the tools that they've seen, which is a good indicator that something's going on, right? But it is only an indicator. It does not tell us, again, if anybody's actually doing anything. We, of course, have our website, and we use Google Analytics to track what's going on with our website. I'm not going to tell you about this. Dikram put this together. If you would like to have questions, he'll be very happy to answer questions. But it is very helpful. It's very informative. We can break it down by state. We can break it down by page. We can look for troubling trends, like why we used to have a lot of people in Ohio looking at our tool, and then the last month they didn't. What's going on? Really helpful. We can look at the impact of different events. So this is based on an event in Iowa. So there was an event on the 3rd of December 2014, the Iowa State Integrated Crop Management Conference. I suspect that was Chad Hart who was talking there, our ag economist at Iowa State, who leads our outreach program for U2U. And you can see that the day he talked, the users in Iowa, this is only tracking users in Iowa peaked, right? And then it dropped back off, but it didn't drop back down, not immediately back down to the levels that it was at before. So it's a nice way to just see if you're seeing a trend related to an event. We've also promoted the project in different ways. We did a media campaign where we've sent out promotional materials to target lists with a media buying company, which again is something I didn't know how to do that, but the University of Wisconsin communications team have introduced me to all sorts of things. But we really all questioned before we started, would it be worth it, right? There's an investment in that, but our goal was to really disseminate our tools, but we wanted to look at if it's working. Was the money spent worthwhile? Is there a difference in the different audiences who actually are willing to do something with it? So each round of our media campaign focuses on one of our tools, and it provides a really simple message that's just trying to encourage people to go and look at our tool. We've sent out about 12,000 mailers and 7,000 emails per round, and it costs about $10,000 per round. Gulp. We didn't budget for this originally. I don't know where the money came from. It's okay. Whatever. It's all good. So here's an example of our most recent mailer that I got in my mail. I got two of them. That's why it's costing so much, because I got two of them last time. Two different addresses, though, but same name. So use it or lose it, so the outside just says use it or lose it, could you profit from a split nitrogen application strategy? And then when you open it up, it gives you a little bullet points about the tool and tries to encourage people to go. This is our newest tool it's a relatively old tool, but it just expanded to all 12 states in our region, so we're doing a lot of promotion of that right now. And there's a little picture of when we promoted our growing degree date tool over email. We can look, the direct mail company gives us information about how many were deployed, how many were delivered, if they can track that people actually opened the email, if people clicked after they opened the email, did they then click on a link in the email? We can track all of that. And what you can see in this chart is that the blue are the percentage of people who actually opened their email by different people, and the red are the percentage who click and actually follow a website. And we think we're doing really pretty well based on this. So the company that we're working with said that their typical open rate is 10 to 15%. So that's our blue bars, right? Their typical open rate is 10 to 15%. Their typical click rate is 1 to 5%. So we're probably right around where we should be with the click rate, but we are getting people to at least open our emails a little bit more than they open the average email that this company is associated with. And you can also start seeing some trends where we see that we definitely are getting quite a lot of opens from, for example, the extension folks and CCAs that get this email. We can also look at distribution of website users across an entire month. So am I out of time? 3 minutes? Oh, man. Okay, I'm going to skip this chart. There's our thing again. Okay, what I wanted to talk about are end-of-project surveys really briefly. We are planning, this is where I come in as a social scientist doing evaluation. We did a survey at the beginning, a random sample survey of farmers. We also surveyed all of the advisors in four of our states, and we will be replicating that at the end. So for measuring impact, this is a five-year project. We just applied for a no-cost extension with our case being that we want to do our evaluation in year six. We want to finish our outreach in year five. It does not make sense to do evaluation while we're still doing outreach, and that is a problem with a lot of grant-funded projects, right, is when do you do your evaluation, right? So we want to do it after we finish outreach, which was our case for a no-cost extension. Hopefully we will be granted one. And we will then be resurveying farmers, resurveying advisors, so we can really try and understand if people are using it and measuring all of the things in our logic model. And then we'll also be serving our U2U team again. And very briefly, what we've done throughout the project, and the Wisconsin team has done that, they have done in-depth interviews with team members. Those have been presented to me as the project manager. They write a 30-page, 40-page report with quotes from people, with themes that they've pulled out. They are presented to me completely anonymously as the project director. I don't know who said things, but it highlights if we have issues, if people aren't happy with things, if people feel like they're not getting credit, if people feel like we've run off with the split nitrogen tool, but they don't think that was a good idea, and they didn't feel like they could come and say anything. I would say they've actually been 98% positive comments, but the couple where there has been an issue, it's helped us know that we need to do something, and our leadership team can get together and talk about those. We also did a survey of our team early on, where we asked questions about, like, what do you think the point of this project is? What kinds of the questions we asked. And we identified from that that we had, even though we were all involved in writing this proposal together, we you can't spell everything out in a proposal, right? We actually had different things that we wanted. There was quite a large difference, a statistically significant difference between the economists and the other social scientists and what we thought the goal was, but also between other groups, a difference between people who had extension appointments and didn't have extension appointments. We published that in Ag Systems as a short communication because I think that's a really valuable way to identify on large interdisciplinary projects early on, right? Evaluate yourselves and see where you're at so you can get yourselves, because then we use that information at one of our annual meetings to say, okay, let's talk about this, right? Let's get ourselves on the same page, because if we're not on, we think we're on the same page because we've got this amazing, you know, two-page long bubble logic model thing, and but yet we're still interpreting terms differently, and we needed to know that early on. So our guiding principle has been regular evaluation of our tools and ourselves, and that evaluation should be deliberate, and it has to happen from the beginning. You need to have clear outcome and impact goals to design effective evaluation strategies. And evaluation can be an effective tool, ongoing tool to improve outcomes, and it's not just an end of project exercise, although we are also going to do that end of project piece. So that's it. So I thank you for your time, and welcome. It's probably no time for questions because I rambled on.
Okay.
Next. Yes, in the back.
How will the tools be maintained once the money dries up?
So we are actually transferring our tools to the regional climate centers. There are two NOAA-funded regional climate centers in our region, the Midwest Regional Climate Center based at the University of Illinois, High Plains Regional Climate Center at the University of Nebraska. We built into our proposal funding to transfer tools to them. And as we were developing our tools, we worked with their technicians to make sure our programming languages worked for them. And they will not only take our tools, but they will then improve and maintain them because it also fits with their goals of providing climate information to their community. So we're really pretty excited about that. And people can still come. So we're still promoting ourselves as agclimate4u.org, which is our website. When our project ends and the tools have been transferred, we're just going to redirect our website. So it'll be pretty seamless to people. I mean, there might be a note saying what's happening, but we're not going to need to publicize it, right? Because people will just find us by coming to where they've bookmarked and where they're looking for us. Good question. Thank you.